It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. And my buddy, my compatriot, my co-host on this show, Mike Ward, still on the injured reserve. But like I said, he's getting a new bionic knee in, which makes him even deadlier come offshore fishing season this year. So speedy recovery, Mike. We'll get him back in here. Hey, here's the thing that this is going to be my transition into our conversation on today's show. What I worry about is before he gets to fishing, you know, what's coming up at the end of this month, how my man Mike Ward, I think I'm probably going to have to tote him. I don't know if I'm going to get a wagon or something, put him in to take him turkey hunting, because turkey hunting coming, and Mike Ward with the replaced knee. Maybe he'll be recovered in time to go chase him. I hope so. Hopefully we'll get him back in here next week and get an update on his condition. But our guest on this show, Stephen Mitchell, who's the upland bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. It's his phone gets to ringing, well, year round, but when it comes close to turkey season, we say, hey, Stephen, what's up? Hey, man.
How you doing?
doing good. Yeah, it is that time. I don't know about you, but there's like the text string I have here with my buddies is everybody. You hearing any? Everybody's listening in the morning. What are you hearing? And then knowing that we're turkey hunters, so we're all lying to each other. So what are you hearing?
My phone has been blowing up, and my email has also been blowing up. So there's people that are seeing turkeys displaying, hearing a few gobbles, and all across the state. And as you've down your way and even up this way right now, it looks to be an early spring as far as the vegetation is looking. So turkey season is upon us, so we'll take it as it comes.
That's for sure. And I was going to just talk about turkey hunting with you for a while, knowing that not only are you the upland coordinator for the state, but you're a guy that likes to turkey hunt a lot. So we will talk some hunting here in a second. But you mentioned that with the green up and so much conversation about how early this spring is. I mean, my tomato plants show it. The pollen on my truck shows it. I mean, it's here. But the cycle for the turkey, the science of it and the biology of it, is it based on the temperature out there? Or I'd always heard, not always, but have heard that it's based more on the amount of daylight and dark, more like some ducks migrate that way too. Is it what causes it to kick in?
You hit the nail on the head. We can look at vegetation, we can look at temperature, but overall breeding season for turkeys is driven, as well as a lot of other animals, is driven by photo period, which is the length of daylight hours in our day, and right now it's increasing more and more. So that drives testosterone in male turkeys, and they'll gobble year round, but come February, end of January, we start adding a little bit of daylight and testosterone levels increase, and so they start fighting for their place in the hierarchy and dominance, and then we see them strutting in fields, pastures, we hear them gobbling, and we think everything's going on right now. We're missing it.
Right.
We can have season open today, but that's just not the case. And a lot of other animals, until the female is receptive, there's no breeding taking place. So then you have the luteinizing hormones in the females, which comes on a little bit later. So until they're ready, the males can gobble and strut all they want to, but until those females are ready, there's no breeding taking place.
Is that photo period, that length of day that you talked about, kicking in the testosterone with the gobblers, is it affecting the hens as well? Are they dependent on that? The same thing?
Yes, it's the same thing, but their hormones just rise a little bit later. I mean, we can relate that to humans. But
Right, sure, got that right.
But we're not driven by photo period, but turkeys are.
So, and I think the flip around to this, and as I try to have critical thinking on this, because yes, I mean, we all are going, man, it's warm. It's they're gonna be done before we even get started. But that photo period thing is also true, because go pick up, if you got a stack of magazines that have anything about turkeys in them, there's going to be a picture of turkeys strutting in the snow, right? I mean, you're going to be, whether it be here in the Southeast or more likely in the Midwest or whatever, and you're like, if it was completely temperature dependent, you know, you're out in Kansas or whatever, when the photo period's right, whether there's snow on the ground or not, those gobblers are strutting and hens are getting receptive.
Right. Right. And you know, we have those cold periods in some weeks, some days in our turkey seasons in Alabama. And as you know, as long as the wind's not blowing crazy and we don't have a foot of snow, then our turkeys are still going to be gobbling, even if it's, 32 degree morning.
Yeah. That's true. They don't really, you're like, oh, it's, yeah, if it's cold, they still gobble. Actually, some of those mornings have been really great because you can hear it such a distance when it's cold and still.
Right, right. Can't say that about every morning, because we know that turkeys, for some reason, there's some mornings that seem perfect and they still don't gobble.
Okay, I'm fixing to ask you. No, come on now. You got to have an answer for me, because that's one of the things I wanted to get into, but we can. Yeah, I guess we can jump into it right now. That pattern, and I know the studies have been done and looking at it, and hunter pressure and those kind of things can affect that. But I could call you, Stephen, and then say, man, they were blowing the woods up yesterday. You need to get down here. And then you get down here, and it's half of what I heard the day before, or a third of what I heard the day before. And it seems to me, as a human being, the weather's kind of the same. But they're just not. What do we have any idea what goes on then when that happens?
It can be site-specific, property-specific. Those local turkey populations, it's according to where they're at in the cycle. If there's a lot of hens, they're becoming receptive, and those gobblers are with them. I mean, why do they need to gobble? So they just, back to being henned up.
Right.
Those gobblers, they're henned up, and they don't have a need to gobble. They know where the hens are at. They might gobble a time or two or not, and just fly down, and there's the hens with them, and they just strut around all day. And that's another thing, hunters need to be aware of. If they can hear it and everything isn't greened up and they can hear far enough, listen for the spitting and drumming. I mean, you've heard it. I've heard it. Sometimes when everything is quiet, you can hear that, and you got to be pretty close, so you better be finding a tree. But you can hear that sometimes.
Yeah, I often say that. I hear spitting, and I don't know that I don't feel drumming. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I know I'm hearing it, but it's like almost like, I can tell there's bird drumming, but it's like I'm feeling it as much as I'm hearing it. It's
right.
Weird.
Right. It's a vibration, and, if they're close enough, it sounds like they're vibrating everything. It's almost like you can feel it in your chest.
Yeah, I just bring it back. Happy memories. I always enjoy that. Talking about where the turkeys are, depending on photo period. I know with the moving of the season dates and starting later and going later, that is dependent. That moves to accommodate right a peak nesting. I guess the first question would be, Stephen, do we have a peak nesting date for Alabama or anywhere along this latitude?
Our peak nest initiation date, based on past research and a literature review of Alabama and surrounding states, is second week of April. That's nest initiation. That's egg laying. So it's going to be, they're going to lay on average 10 to 11 eggs. So then peak nest incubation would come after that.
Okay, and I'm going to get to the incubation in a second, but as I'm talking about a peak, are we looking like at a bell curve, or is it, would there be some that are starting way earlier than that, some that are starting way later, and let's say that on their first clutch, because I know they can nest again, but let's keep it on the first clutch. Is it like a triangle pyramid up there to the peak, or is it like a bell curve?
There can be outliers. I mean, what we're talking, what I just, the second week of April is a mean, an average.
Okay.
So you're going to have outliers before and after that second week of April.
So, I am going to get nerdy because I got you on here. This idea, and we talk about it with deer too, how kind of whacked out it is right now with, you know, when you have populations that are not, the ratios aren't really good, but, you know, predator swamping and this idea of so many critters that kind of make sure they're putting their babies on the landscape all at the same time with the hope that theirs are going to survive. Is that in the turkey population and in the turkey breeding world, does that happen? I mean, that peak has that scientific or that ecological benefit, or what do you know about that?
Yes, there is research to back that up. I mean, if you've got all the nesting going on at the same time, you know, there's more chance for success, less chance of a predator getting, you know, a nest or all the nests. So
okay, that's worth explaining.
And just like, you know, we covered goblin a few minutes ago, there's some current research going on. We actually have ARUs in Alabama, which is a recording device up in a tree, and it's measuring or recording gobbles starting in February, and we will go through on into June to record the gobbles. And so far, the data is showing that there's really not much difference from north to south.
Okay, because that would be the question of, you know, do they start earlier in the southern part of the state? But then, I'll tell you what, we're up against the break. I'm going to pick this up when we come back, because this is a question, too, is like, okay, maybe from North Alabama to South Alabama is one thing, but what about, you know, what's happening in, I don't know, Kentucky or something when, you know, something else is happening in Alabama? You got the man who's got the answers to that. Upland Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Stephen Mitchell, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on the IR right now, but we'll get him back here. Hopefully get him back in the studio soon. I don't know how quickly he gets back in the turkey woods. It's okay. Give guys like me a chance, you know, get Mike. He's going to hear this and I'm going to get in trouble. Hey, continuing our conversation with Upland Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Stephen Mitchell. And the discussion here, turkey season and the start date and what the turkeys are doing. You mentioned this. So and that listening device study that is being conducted in Alabama. And is it elsewhere or is it just here?
I think there's some still in Georgia. And most of this is with Dr. Michael Chamberlain. And, you know, he's done studies in almost every southeastern state. So if it hasn't been done in other states, a particular state is about to be.
So, and that's showing you what you're talking about that as we went to the break. It shows you what about when the birds are gobbling.
Well, you know, gobbling is a part of breeding behavior. So, what it's showing right now is, you know, there's not much of a latitudinal difference from north to south in Alabama. So, turkeys down in Baldwin County are gobbling, and turkeys up in Jackson County are gobbling, and there's not much difference.
How much latitude do you have to change before you do see a difference? Is there any research on that? I mean, how far north do you have to go before they're like, they are not gobbling right now?
I really don't have an answer to that, but I think, you know, it's about 2 hours difference of what they're seeing before you see any change, and then there's not much. Now, if you go to from Alabama to Kentucky, not sure. I haven't seen the data there, but don't know if it's been compared to that level. But I'm just basing what I know on what we have in Alabama so far.
So the idea here of, you know, establishing that peak nesting date, and you said two things. There was a start of nesting, and you said that was when the peak of the start of nesting.
Average peak of nest initiation, which is egg laying, is the second week of April.
Okay.
In Alabama.
And then you were starting to talk about the incubation period.
The incubation is where they actually start sitting on the nest and come off of it once a day, and they sit there the rest of the time, daylight hours and nighttime hours. That's the incubation.
And that peaks when?
Well, that's, you know, depending on how many eggs they lay, So if we say the second week of April, then, you know, 10 days to 11 days later, which is average number of eggs, when they're through, they're going to start the incubation process.
So they leave those eggs. Egg number one. So this is interesting science-wise. So hen goes in there, starts a nest, lays egg number one. Then she doesn't incubate that egg right away?
No. She lays one egg per day until she's through, which, like I said, the average is 10 to 11.
So when those eggs are on the ground there, is she flying up to roost at night, or is she staying on the, she's not staying on the ground then?
She's still flying up to roost during the egg-laying process.
So
she'll be on the ground.
But that's a whole other part of this discussion I want to get into. We talk about, and want to get into, you know, trying to turn things around with turkey populations across the country, especially even here in the Southeast. You know, so much of the discussion of trapping and all that is, and kind of my thought process was to really knock those meso predators down when it was, you know, here. I picture that hen sitting on the nest all night, you know, fending off possums and raccoons and all that stuff. But you're saying there's 10 or 11 days where there's, at nighttime, that predator could go in there and there's nothing sitting on that nest.
That's correct. And, you know, that goes to nesting habitat. You know, everything circles back to habitat. We can blame predators, and predator management is a part of any good habitat management, but you've got to have habitat first. So if you've got 100 acres of nothing but seven-year-old loblolly pine,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to be good turkey habitat.
So
there's, you know, as soon as those pines get old enough to thin, you go through the thinning process. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do to improve turkey habitat. But nesting habitat is a valuable component of the overall habitat. You got to have it. Which then, even if you have it, turkeys have been shown to roost in some crazy places, right beside, in a hardwood stand, right next to a big hardwood. Some of those actually hatch, and then some of the ones you would think, like on a field edge and some three-year-old roughs, they're hidden well. Those get depredated, but a good mixture of it all is what you want. But most of the time, what we see that's lacking is brood habitat.
Yeah, and let's break these down. We'll go back, and I'm going to have you. You said a three-year-old rough, but let's start with nesting habitat. And so, and describe that to somebody who's trying to maximize that, because they may say, you know, Stephen, I got some thickets on my place. Is that what does nesting habitat look like? What's the best? Obviously, you said don't. I mean, we've all kind of heard stories or seen them nest in places that weren't the best. But what would you, if you're painting me a picture, what's it look like?
We're looking at stuff that's a little bit brushy. You know, something. You know, you look at how tall a hen is. And this will go to brood and nesting habitat. She wants to be able to see. She doesn't want the nest exposed. And I can say things to negate what I'm saying now, but she doesn't want to be exposed. She wants to be able to hide in, under something, low-hanging brush, you know, shrubs, just a brushy look. Imagine imagine what you think you would find quail in.
Right.
But that brushy look.
But it's not a thicket. But it's not, I mean, if somebody goes, man, the turkey should be good in there. I got a thicket of gallberries and briars and all that the deer really bed in. That doesn't mean that's good for turkeys if it's something you can't see 2 feet through.
No, right. We're not talking thickets. Overall, for nesting, we're talking edge. You know, if you let a couple of tractor widths grow up on the edge of a hardwood bottom, on the edge of a field, some change in the habitat, like going from a loblolly plantation to hardwoods. You know, you get to the edge of loblolly plantation, some of it might be a little more open. So we're looking at edge more than anything. Edges of roadways, they love to.
But okay.
That's on the edge almost anywhere.
So let's go. I mean, we'll jump back though into predator management coming from the trapping side of this. And, you know, I've heard this discussion that you have those maybe linear areas that are this good nesting habitat. that that makes it easier for a predator to hunt it because it's, you know, a strip versus a bigger rectangle or square or something. What's the research show on that?
Actually, you want to have more linear openings than just a square.
Okay.
Or a circle. So it makes them have to cover a little bit more ground, and you know, the predator might miss the nest. Whereas, you know, a box, a square, they're going to cover every bit of it. And especially, you know, turkeys being nesting on the edges.
So they're not going to use.
Easy to cover.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. If you had that square, that big square versus linear, the turkeys are still going to use the edges of that square instead of, there's not going to be turkeys using the middle of it as much.
Correct.
Now,
I mean, don't write that in stone, because that's not.
Yeah, well, critters are critters, right? They do all kind of crazy things. But generally, what the research shows is that they're using that edge of whatever that block is.
Right.
Now, we talked about nesting cover here, and people, okay, picturing this brushy thing, not a thicket, but brushy cover. And then you were getting into this when I stopped you. Brood cover. Now, explain how that looks different and why it's valuable. And I got to say, as a land manager, it's one of the things that's more of a challenge. I mean, it's not impossible. It's not that hard, but there's less of it on most places.
Yes. When we talk, well, even some of the nesting cover, we're talking early successional habitat, more so for brood cover. And we're talking ragweed. We're talking weeds. Everything that everybody tries to get rid of over summer, we manicure our yards, getting rid of weeds. We manicure our pastures, getting rid of weeds. So those areas that are holding those weeds, it provides two things for poults. It's going to provide some overhead cover until they get to a certain size, and it's going to attract insects. So from a new hatch poult, if you get down and look at ground level, you want ground level to be open so they can move through it and forage on the insects and some seeds and shoots. But early succession is weeds, and that's what you want. And it's a transition. You want it in conjunction with your nesting cover. So as soon as they hatch, they can hit that early successional weedy area and move around and feed. And the more of that you've got, the less they move, the better their survival.
Right. And you know, picture this, you know, the stuff that I've read and listened to, and is that little poult on those little legs, how far you can say, oh, I got some brood habitat over there in the northeast corner. But if they're nesting in the southwest corner, they may never get there.
That's correct.
So yeah. You like these things right against each other, like transition from nesting to brood?
A good overall mix across a property is ideal. You know, you don't want them to have to, right next to each other. But, you want it spaced out across the property.
And that is, and I tell you, right up against the break, we'll come back and talk more about how you do that. And, of course, we're going to get back into the reasons why all this stuff is important and what we're trying to tackle and deal with turkey populations in the southeast and right here in Alabama with Stephen Mitchell. He's the Upland Bird Coordinator with the state of Alabama. And coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and guest this week, Upland Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Stephen Mitchell, which I guess, describe for a second, too. Obviously, turkeys, but what else comes under Upland Bird Coordinator?
Bob white quail and grouse.
And but somebody's going to say, grouse? Grouse? How many do we have left in the state? That's like a North Alabama thing, right?
It is, northeast Alabama, and hopefully we might have a few still there. They may be crossing the line into Georgia and back, or Tennessee and back, I'm not sure, but we have very few.
You did mention that other bird that keeps your attention in mind as well, and we'll get right back to turkeys, y'all, so calm down. I'll get back to turkeys. But this actually kind of fits in with the description or discussion of turkeys, you know, how we lost Bob White in the state. Are we, you know, y'all have some efforts going on public ground. There's a few of us on the private side that have been working hard for quail habitat. Are we seeing any benefit? Are we seeing any turnaround?
Where there's active habitat management, yes, you can still have wild quail.
So it is. There are still some.
Yes, always. There's places.
Right.
Properties in Alabama that have great quail populations, but they have the land mass and they have the resources, and they follow through and provide the habitat, and they have great populations of wild quail.
It's a wild thing. I think just anecdotally, I'll put up pictures sometime on Facebook or something when we quail hunt, and people say, "Well, y'all only killed three. Last time I went, we shot 50 for our group." And for me to explain to somebody, it's like, "No, y'all, these are wild quail." And people say, "No." I said, "Yeah, no, they're wild quail. There's still some wild quail. It takes some effort, like you said, but it's still a." It's still a thing that can happen. So it's good. Hopefully there's, I don't know, maybe it's because the people I hang out with, I think there are more people than in the last 10 years, I've seen more people interested in trying to do what they can at little bits or big bits to bring back quail to their land. So yeah. Maybe we're turning a corner.
Well, we're trying, especially on our management areas, where what we can control. We've implemented different habitat techniques to improve the habitat for quail. So and it's showing some signs of improvement.
All right. So, and this is here's the segue. There's things that we could be doing for both, right? If we're back to this discussion of brood habitat for turkey poults, there's benefit for quail, right?
That's correct. Fire and a disc can provide a lot of benefit habitat-wise for quail and turkey. So, and when I bring up a disc, we're talking about fall disking areas that are unproductive in fields, crop fields, pasture land, strips through the woods, woods roads, anything that, you know, you can disc up in the fall and just let it go fallow. And maybe that's the picture I should have painted earlier.
Because
when you fall disc, you're going to get a weedy component that comes back. And then a lot of times ragweed, which is excellent brood cover for both quail chicks and turkey poults. Fire, you know, folks that do prescribe fire on their properties, the recovery that comes back is excellent brooding areas. Now, if you're doing a growing season burn, you might run into some problems on the timing because you want the cover there whenever the birds are hatching.
But this idea that people, you know, break up units and maybe they burn this during a growing season burn, but they, you know, over on the other side of the burn, they still have, you know, like what they did from a fall disking, or they still have brooding habitat next to nesting cover, even though they're taking this one sector of their land out of it, that'll be good the next year, right? But they still, you got to leave something.
Right. And a lot of places, you know, the fire is used for to reclaim some of the habitat. A lot of places, you know, a turkey's not going to be there anyway, nesting or anything else. So, you know, you run a fire through there and next year it may be great nesting habitat, or it could turn into good brooding area.
So Stephen, how much of this, so we're kind of talking about two things. So I'm going to circle around to what we started our conversation off with. We're talking about how to get more poults to, you know, more eggs to turn into poults and more poults to turn into adult turkeys. But the lever that you did talk about, some of the management going on public land here, but the lever y'all have and have worked with has been one of changing the start date and the end date of turkey season in Alabama, and also reduction in number. Has that shown benefit, and the why, and I guess the whys around that too? Why are we why did we move, you know, a few years ago, move to this later start?
Based on our research, we did a 5-year research project with Auburn, and developed a population model. And that research has shown that there would be some benefit into delaying the season start. So we did that. We didn't take any opportunities, as in days, away. So you still had the same number of days in the season you can hunt. We just shifted the start and the ending date a little bit. Give those gobblers a little more time to breed with those hens, and you know, it's going to be a while before any benefit is shown from that. You know, that's the results don't happen overnight, so it's a process, and it's going to take a little while.
But that idea, when I first heard this discussed, and I think I had talked to Director Sykes and Dr. Chamberlain about this on some shows, and it was a little bit of a mind blower for me, because as long as I've hunted turkeys, I guess I didn't think that deeply, that you killed that boss gobbler early in the season. I just figured by that afternoon, one of those other gobblers, you know, whether it's another older gobbler or a 2-year-old or whatever, would just take over. And to hear that research say that that's not the way it goes, that then there could be 2 or 3 days before there's any more breeding going on. Is that kind of what the science says?
Yes. It's not all been fully proven yet, but we do know that earlier nests are more successful, and earlier hatched broods have higher survival. So it makes sense when you put everything together. If we can get those hens bred and you know, those nests on the ground, those chicks, those poults out of the egg, everything is better. That has been proven through research.
So, I mean, other than, you know, wanting to have, you know, a good population of gobblers going forward for each year, scientifically, once those hens are bred, it's not as big a deal that we're killing them.
Right. They're more expendable. Exactly.
Okay. So, but you said that's something, because I wonder about that, because you could, you know, we all know that, like, if you didn't touch a piece of property turkey-wise, their numbers kind of seem to have this, you know, big years, not so good years, okay years, another good year, a bad year. So with reducing reducing that early gobbler harvest, you're going to be in a, like, yeah, you could do that in year one, but if you might have other issues, might cause you not to have as many turkeys next year or more. Is that kind of the idea why you need more than 1 year to see the benefits, or?
Yes. I mean, you know, there's all kind of factors that can go into just one piece of property. But there's usually an ecological time lag, and it may take years to see a consistent positive change. So it's going to take a little time. Our recruitment has been declining for decades, and you know, which may be density dependent and habitat degradation phenomenon going on. So these changes that were implemented, and you know, it's only a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, at this point, is that delay enough? You know, the old research and other states outside of the Southeast, mostly, they set up their initial turkey seasons based on nest incubation dates.
Okay.
So they push their season towards average nest incubation. So that's why a lot of those states, their seasons open up way later than ours.
So, and then I guess there's there's multiple parts of this, but okay, we're trying to make sure that we get those hens bred. That was the thing that really had surprised me with that early research, is I just assumed all hens got bred. And, you know, when you had no poults with a hen, then either the nest failed or all her poults got eaten. But to hear that research say, no, some of those hens didn't get bred. So we're trying to make sure those hens get bred. That's the first part, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And, you know, we know a lot about turkey behavior and the hierarchy and the dominance, the fighting that goes on before season. So just, you know, not even based on research, but in my mind, common sense. You've got a dominant gobbler. He's went through all the fighting. He's there. Sexual selection plays a part. Those hens have picked that gobbler. So he's supposed to do the breeding, but bam, opening day, he gets taken out. So those subdominant gobblers around, you know, they're going to fight again a little bit. And then those hens have to go through that process of picking that dominant gobbler secondary again. And so that kind of delaying everything. And like I alluded to earlier, we do know that earlier nests are more successful and earlier poults have higher survival. So if we're affecting that, we're pushing everything a little bit later where there's less survival, which in turn, you know, we're going to have less fall recruitment.
There it is. All right, coming right back, more with Upland Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Stephen Mitchell. Of course, we're talking turkeys here as we get ready for what happens at the end of the month. That's an exciting time of year for sure. Be right back. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Enjoy our conversation with Upland Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Stephen Mitchell. Who, like us, I mean, he's thinking turkeys for hunting them coming up over the next month or so, but he's also in the business of making sure we have as many as possible out there. And, you know, Stephen, I was thinking about this. So you've got this change of the start date to try to get more of these hens bred that will have pull off earlier nests with greater success. All right, so there's one lever that you got working. But the what if in me says this, if that's good, if that process is good, those hens are getting bred, but we don't have what we talked about, you know, earlier in the show, we don't have the good nesting habitat and the good brooding habitat, they may be getting bred, but does that then, you know, you have a whole bunch of them get bred, but then you don't pull off many nests. You know, that could also defeat what you did earlier in the year.
Yes. Well, you're exactly right. The only lever our agency has to pull is season and bag limit, or season structure and bag limits. That's all we can do. Alabama is 96% privately owned. So our other part of our jobs is anybody that wants information, wants a site visit from us, we can go to their property and provide our recommendations if they want them. We're not there to point out anything bad. So if we come to your property, we have a whole unit of technical assistance biologists, one in each district of the state, and some of our other biologists even do site visits. So there's somebody that can help. And if we come, we're not looking at your corn feeders. We're not looking at anything that you think we might be looking at. We're there to help with your habitat.
Yeah.
So they can call on us, and we can go, and we can look. And, you know, I see a lot of times when I pull up, I can tell there's not enough brooding cover out there. Things are too thick. It's more of a deer habitat than it is turkeys. So we're here to help. And like I said, that's besides season and bag limit restrictions, that's the only other way we can help.
Yes.
We can make suggestions all day long, but if the landowner doesn't implement the habitat changes, then they're not going to have the number of wildlife that they want.
But they can see. Yeah. But the benefit of that is, right, I mean, if we with the change of the season start and people go, okay, more of these hens are getting bred. Now we have that nesting habitat. Now we have that brood habitat. It seems like it'd have a, I know we have good and bad years, but it could have a big multiplier effect in that, right? You take piece of ground A that doesn't have that right habitat mix and piece B, they both started hunting on, you know, start of season. And then hopefully we've had a bunch of those hens bred, but the outcome on those two different pieces for the number, like you said, fall recruitment of turkeys, what's there then might be, I mean, could it be significantly different between those two tracks?
Yes, definitely. There's probably not going to be very many turkeys on the bad habitat property that you're talking about anyway. So yeah, it's going to be significant difference because of that first. But yeah, overall, I you know, and turkeys, you know, move around.
Well, I was fixing to ask you, you know, the old thing, man, if you got turkeys on your place in the fall, it's going to be slim pickings in the spring, or vice versa. How about, I mean, that anecdotally, we always talk about that as turkey hunters. What does science show? Is that some truth to that?
Oh, there's definitely truth to that, because, you know, turkeys have a fall-winter range, and they have a spring and summer range. I've seen some of the most beautiful hardwoods I've ever seen. Went turkey hunting on it. Did not hear a turkey in there. This is 700 acres.
Wow.
And I did not hear a turkey gobble, but it was beautiful. But, you know, the caveat there was no logging roads through it, maybe one. There was no openings. So, you know, hardly any nesting or brooding habitat. So, you know, it was all hardwoods. It was mass producers, acorns.
Yeah, they probably saw a ton.
They probably saw a ton of turkeys,
right? I mean, during the people in their deer hunting have been like, "Bam, we got the turkeys."
I was excited before I went, because the property owner, oh man, we eat up with turkeys. They're everywhere. My deer hunters see them all the time and tired of them and wish they weren't there. And well, that's deer season. They weren't there during turkey season. But you know, turkeys transition to more open land, fields and pastures during the spring and summer, because that gobbler, he's going to display and he's going to gobble. He wants to be seen and heard. So the more open the areas, that's where he's going to go. And the hens are going to move to there because of nesting and brooding habitat.
You know, just about 2 minutes left here. I got to ask you the decoy question as well. With that that change in the regulation, have we seen that the decoys lead to higher gobbler harvest, or is that the reason you made that move, the state did?
I don't have any data to back that question up. That was our Conservation Advisory Board made that change.
Okay.
That was not a recommendation from us.
From DCNR. Okay. But that's for, and people, I mean, the regulations have been changed a while, but if y'all are new to turkey hunting, make sure you go check those regulations out there. So you think some of this stuff is going to take a while to see if it bears fruit, and that fruit would be what that, I mean, the thing you say says you're successful is it poults per hen, or is it that, I know they're linked, obviously, or is it fall recruitment? Like, what's the test score that someone like you uses to say, yes, we're having success?
We do a survey every July, August. It's a brood survey across the state of Alabama, observational, out the truck windows. All of our people are looking. We've got other people that help out. But we measure poults per hen and brood size, and also the age. We've got a three-age group for poults. So we measure all that and put it together. And, you know, we hope to get above two poults per hen on average statewide, which we've been under that for a long time. Over the last 10 years, we've been under that. And the two poult per hen is thought to be the threshold for a sustainable turkey population.
So that's what we're going for. Steve and I appreciate it, and we will get you back on soon. Good luck in the woods yourself, and keep doing what you're doing to bring more turkeys to us here in Alabama.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and if anybody needs help, just reach out.
Will do. There he is, Stephen Mitchell, upland bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, and we'll do it again next week. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.